Blog Talk Radio.
I think Shot Meek got busted in the head.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, Austin, the hot block commander.
How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hour show and keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Both with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine, sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war ain't Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
Yes, sir. What's good, War Room Nation? First day of spring, and we are cooking with fire. Welcome back to the best roundtable in sports. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports, the company that's revolutionizing the revolution in sports media. I'm B. Austin, and I'm joined by the Blueprint Jimmy Williams and Dr. Akil Bayon. We're down two men, but we're just as deadly. We have a great show lined up for you tonight. March Madness is upon us, and super sports agent Lee Steinberg, a.k.a. the real-life Jerry Maguire, will join us in about 30 minutes to discuss the death of the NFL. Join us in the JW Philly Realty chat room right now at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to join the conversation. Call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Before we get started, we'd like to shout out the team. The future of sports talk radio has arrived. So be sure and listen to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. Also, check out Brandon and Daniel of Sports Trap Radio on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on ueradiolive.com. Don't worry, if you can't catch them live, you can hear and watch all of our partner shows at warroomsports.blogspot.com. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newvibradio.com. That's 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern, and on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on fatsradio.com. Enough of that. It's birthday time.
Yes, sir.
It's my birthday. Yay!
Birthdays are brought to you by DirecTV. If you'd like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, including the NFL Sunday Ticket, go to our website, warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, and order a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. Tell them we sent you. If you call yourself a sports fan, you got to have DirecTV. There's just no way around it. Gentlemen, what's good?
Man, I feel blessed and highly favored.
There you go, what he said.
What he said. Get right into these birthdays. Adrian Peterson, Adrian Lewis Peterson, is 28 today, fellas.
It's my birthday. Yay!
Jimmy, when I say Adrian Peterson, what comes to mind?
Well, it's interesting because, we all know that Adrian Peterson is probably the best running back in the NFL now. When I think of him, I think of Deer Antler Spray, HGH. I think of Star Wars, and I also think of E.T. because either this guy is on something or he's not from this planet. Because no one comes from an injury that fast, comes back from an injury that fast, and dominates the way he does, specifically lining up against 10 men in the box because, he was so dominant this past year, and they knew he was getting the ball, and it didn't matter. So, again, either this guy is not human or he got some explaining to do.
Kill, Adrian Peterson.
Man, the fact that he should have broken Eric Dickerson's record within like 10 months of tearing his ACL. I mean, that's just crazy and amazing. And he only didn't break it because he thought he broke it, but he didn't. He was short by, 9 yards? So So, yeah. I mean, it's just amazing how he can – I mean, he was already amazing, and then it's almost like he's better after the torn ACL. So just more props to him. Shout out to him. They need to take some of his DNA and try to maybe recreate it to help heal a lot of ailments we have in this world.
Yo, real talk. When I think of Adrian Peterson, I think of several things. Shaka Zulu, Mandingo Warriors, and the original black man.
Django.
Django. Unchained. Next birthday is Thomas R. Flores, a.k.a. Tom Flores, who turns 76 today. Jimmy, when I say Tom Flores, what comes to mind?
I know a lot about Tom Flores just because I'm like a history buff, and it's interesting because he's not in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if he's one of the most underrated guys, and I hate to say anything good about him because he is a Raider, but when I look at the fact that he has the second most wins in the Raiders history, only behind John Madden, he has, I believe, two Super Bowl wins as well, and he also won a championship as a coach, an assistant coach, as well as a player. And add on top of that, he was the first minority coach to win a bowl in the history of the league. A lot of people don't know that. So, I mean, he has a nice resume. With that being said, he's still not in the Hall of Fame. And I guess a lot of people give credit to Al Davis and the system that he put in place back then and the kind of players that he was able to bring in. But when I look at Flores' resume, it's kind of impressive. I mean, when you add everything in together, and I don't know whether the NFL is similar to NBA in terms of just having – a basketball Hall of Fame. I know it's the NFL Hall of Fame, but do they count your overall body of work? And that's something that I honestly don't know. Guys like Mike Ditka, who won a Super Bowl, was considered a good coach, but he's already in as a player. Like, are you able to go in twice? Or
yeah, I believe that you are, and I say that just because I've heard some talk of Dick LeBeau going in twice because as a coach,
and also
as a cornerback. So, but I don't know. I don't know. Somebody in the chat room, find that out for us. Chuck, catch us back
up. See, I didn't know that. Now, if you look at just what he did as a player, just what he did as a coach, maybe not. But in totality, if you look at his accomplishments in the NFL, then, you know, I would think that he may be Hall of, at least considered for the Hall of Fame. But if you separate the two, as if you're saying, then I don't know. You know what I mean? But that's what I think of when I think of Tom Flores, not to get long-winded.
Dr. Bayon, Tom Flores.
I mean, I'll be honest. I was not really familiar with his body of work. I knew that he was a coach, a great coach, longtime coach. One thing I did find out about him is that he was the first Hispanic quarterback to play in the NFL and the first minority coach to win big in the NFL.
Yeah.
Tom, shout out to Tom Flores for bringing the mixing bowl to the NFL. I'll be honest, man. I don't have much on Tom Flores. Raiders coach had to deal with Weekend at Bernie's, aka Al Davis. So he must be a good dude. Let's move on. Patrick James Riley, better known to y'all as Pat Riley. Gentlemen, Pat Riley turns 68 today. Dr. Bayon, Pat Rock.
Man, Pat Riley is the epitome of that L.A. Showtime. I mean, obviously you had Magic Johnson and Kareem, but, you know, back then when he had black hair, he had it slicked back with his Armani suits and fast-paced, running gun. And everybody thought that he was a nice coach that just let them run and gun, but they didn't realize that they had some of the hardest practices in NBA history, and they predicated their success on defense. So now he's down in Miami with the GM duties, won a chip in Miami. So, I mean, classic. He goes all the way back to Kentucky. I believe he played in that game, one of those interracial games with Kentucky versus that Texas Western school that's now UCF.
Yeah,
I think he played in that game as well.
Yeah, me personally, this is Jimmy speaking. When I think of Pat Riley, I think of a lot of things. It's going along the lines of what Kill said. No matter what Austin tries to say about the Lakers not playing defense in the 80s, they were a tough-nosed defensive team, but they was overshadowed by the fact that they ran the ball and put up the amount of points that they put up. But they were one of the toughest defensive teams. And when you look at Pat Riley, all his teams were tough-nosed. I mean, his Heat teams, his Nick teams, you know, all of them didn't win, but they were tough teams. They were always tough teams, and that includes the run-and-gun Lakers. You know, Kurt Rambis and Michael Thompson, some of those guys were, you know, just tough-nosed guys. And I remember when LeBron first came to Miami, there was words that he wasn't used to playing that tough in terms of the practices because, you know, Riles was running things initially, setting up their practices and whatnot, and, you know, it was like a whole new ball game for him coming from Cleveland and pretty much doing what he wanted to. So when I think of Pat Riley, I think of obviously one of the greatest coaches and basketball minds in the history of the game. I mean, you know, wasn't he on the Knicks team that won as well as a player?
Not sure.
I'm sorry, I got Phil Jackson. My
Lakers
wrong,
team.
Wrong great coach.
Yeah.
Wrong,
right,
great
Lakers.
Coach.
Wrong great coach.
Wrong great coach. Wrong great coach, but he's definitely one of the greatest of all time. I was just thinking about that because I'm thinking this guy has won as a general manager. He's also won as a coach with multiple teams. So his resume is impeccable.
Yeah.
His style is impeccable.
Yeah, he won with the Lakers in 72. He won a chip with the Lakers in 72.
Okay, so he also won as a player. So he won as a player.
The triple crown.
As well as
the
GM.
He's got
the
triple crown.
I mean, you know, this guy knows his ball. That's all.
Well, gentlemen, I hate Pat Riley. I mean, I hate him. I've always hated him. With that being said, objectively, I can honestly say that I hold him in the highest regard from a respect standpoint, and his greatness is undeniable. He's definitely a top, probably a top. He's got to be a top 10 NBA coach of all time. Might be top 10 executive of all time as well. Could be considered for that. So shout out to Riles on his birthday.
Give me five better coaches than Pat Riley. You're saying he's a top 10. What about five better coaches than Pat Riley, y'all?
Yeah, and you just reminded me. Correction to brother JW, the Blueprint, a.k.a. Jimmy. Everyone on that Lakers squad played defense except for Irvin Johnson and Norm Nixon.
Not true. That's not true.
Now, Magic did average three steals. He did lead the league in steals a couple
talk
of
Talk to him, Kill. Talk to
yo,
him.
Yo, my response yo. To that, my response to that while Jimmy hopped on is AI averaged two steals. Now, tell me he played defense. Just because you
no,
get
AI
steals.
AI gambled.
AI
Magic
gambled.
Played team defense.
Oh, my God,
because
he's Magic.
I'm telling you. Yeah, listen, man. We're not going to get into this. Cause
yo, man,
all night.
Can we not?
We got all
not,
night.
Man.
Listen,
now,
we
hey,
got
yo,
all
night. Magic's D was like average. Okay, he got steals, three steals a game, but his on the ball defense was questionable. But he did give effort. You see what I mean? So
my question
bad.
Is
was
this
it bad,
though, when
it
you
great?
Now Doc Bay, you're a coach as well. Like just because you're not a great on the ball defender, does it mean you're not a good defensive player? I mean, isn't there such thing as playing team defense and playing within the system, leading
yeah.
your man a certain way that
yeah.
the defense
like
wants you to go?
Yo,
oh,
God,
okay,
leading,
a hard
leading,
and that's all I'm saying, man.
Question.
We got all night.
Leading that question. You're leading.
Now,
you're leading.
Hey, one thing about Pat Riley.
Also intentional. We got all that. Go ahead.
Pat Riley was also a part of the 72 Lakers that won 33 games in a row, and now he's the president of the Miami Heat who won 24 games in a row.
Yeah, that was just brought up in our chat room, by the way, about that. They said he's going to be the reason that the Heat beat the streak.
and then my coaches ahead – Popovich, Larry Brown, not in any order.
Larry Brown.
Larry
yeah,
Brown,
on,
Popovich.
Man. Let's move on. You said Larry Brown. Let's
the
move
great
on.
Great Phil Jackson, Red Auerbach, Lenny Wilkins.
Lenny Wilkins.
Yo,
are you talking about
we gotta move
Lenny
on,
Wilkins?
Man. We gotta move on.
Are you talking
on.
About Lenny Wilkins that looks like
the
Max
next,
Julian?
The next Max? Birthday, yo, I can't diss the Mac. The next birthday is Deron O'Shea Blaylock. But that's not what y'all know him as. Y'all know him as Mookie Blaylock. Turns 46 today. Jimmy, when I say Mookie
it's my
Blaylock.
Birthday. Yay!
When I say
Mookie
Blaylock.
It's funny because he played initially for the Nets, I believe. But when I think of Mookie Blaylock, I always think about him playing for the Atlanta Hawks on a team with Neek, Kevin Wills, those guys. And yo, he used to pick people's pockets. That's what I remember about him because he used to strip the ball from people. So, you know, when NBA Live was popping, I used to use the Hawks just to strip people with Mookie Blaylock because his attributes in terms of steals was through the roof. Mookie Blaylock, when I think of him, I think he led the league in steals a couple times as well. He used to just pluck people ungodly.
Yo, Speaking of that, that's really there's three things you think of when you think of Mookie Blaylock. The fact that he was so adept at getting steals, because dude, and it wasn't passing lane steals, dude would lock up, pluck you from the front, let you go by, try and pluck you from the back, going around your back. Yo, he would steal the ball. He was incredibly quick. The second thing is his three-point shot. He developed through the years, through his NBA career, into a very, very solid, if not very good, three-point shooter. I believe he shot in the high 30s. Dr. Bam will probably let us know the answer to that in a few moments here. But turned into a very good shooter who could give you, you know, buckets as a third or fourth option running the offense. And then lastly, I don't want to start any rumors, but judging by the darkness of his gums and lips, I think that he dabbled in the herbal remedies of the earth.
No comment on that one, man.
Yo, Dr. Bayon.
Yeah, he did one summer in the NBA. While he was playing in the NBA, he was he was stopped for possession of marijuana. But his best years, he shot 38% from the three-point line. One year, he led the league in attempts, 604 threes.
Whoa!
And made 221 for 37%. And he was so he led the league in attempts and was like third in makes. Like you guys said, his steals rating was off the charts. And Steve Smith once said on NBA TV that Mookie would watch a ball handler, point guard, for the whole game, and then into the third or in the fourth quarter, he'll say, "Hey, yo, hey, Smitty, I'm about to go get it." And then he said, Steve Smith said he would always get it. He would always get it.
Yo, how tough is that? "Hey, yo, I'm about to go get it." And then go get the steals. Yo. What the hell wrong with Mookie Blaylock, man?
That's what he's known for. I'm telling you. So when the video games came out, like his, you know how to give you the attributes kill. His joint was his steals was on like
99.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's what we got on Mookie, man. Anyway, man, I'm gonna tell everybody what happened while they were on the ground real quick, if you don't mind, Brother B. Austin. And for those who don't know, While You Were On The Grind is brought to you by Bay Financial Services. And if you need help, because this is income tax time, if you need help managing your money, just check out Bay Financial Services. Go to our website, warroomsports.com, and click on the Bay Financial Services logo. First story I want to talk about is one Kendall Gill from the Fighting Illini. Kendall Gill, he was suspended for trying to beat up one of his colleagues. was trying to play him on air, according to Kendall Gill. Did you guys hear about this story? And what were your thoughts on Kendall Gill, getting indignant with his colleague?
I think Kendall Gill was about to he does part-time MMA in UFC. So I think he was trying to take out some of his anger and frustration in that regard. But that's stupid. Like, you're in a professional environment, and now you want to – beat up your colleague. Like, that just doesn't make any sense.
You want to beat up your colleague because he's exposing your lack of knowledge of the sport which you played all your life. That's really what it boils down to. And I really think that, Jimmy, what award he's won for this. So you might want to get that award. Yeah, you might want to get that award ready. And here's why. If this were to happen 15, maybe even 20 years ago, it still would be horrible. It still would be terrible. We would still talk about him. But you have to realize that Kendall Gill is a middle-aged man. I know he still rocks the S-curl fade sometimes, so you may forget because that's a young boy haircut. But he's like 5 years away from 50, maybe less. And you're fighting someone on air because they questioned your basketball knowledge.
I don't know if it was actually on air, but here's the thing, though. And by the way, the guy's name was Doyle, I believe. Yeah, it was Doyle. It was Tim Doyle was the guy's name. And here's the crazy part about it. I agree with what you're saying. You have to learn to conduct yourself better because, you're not an NBA player anymore where you can, do certain things and get away with it. Like, you know, if you're in the locker room and you're arguing with a teammate and you guys get into a scuffle, you know, that can kind of get swept under the rug. But, no, you can't do that no more, not in this position. And they said they exchanged heated words while in the newsroom at the Comcast Sportsnet Chicago. And then a physical altercation ensued, and the result was blood being drawn. They didn't say whose blood, but we all know what it was, because right away he was dismissed indefinitely from the network's telecast. Pending an investigation.
You should be ashamed of yourself. The way you carry yourself.
Yeah, so, you know, there you go, Kendall Gill, man. You know, you gotta protect that job. I don't know how he looks financially, because Kendall Gill didn't have a long career. But you gotta protect that job, man. There are a lot of ex-jocks, so to speak, who would love to be in that position. You know what I mean? So.
He's Joe for that.
Hey, that's more aggression than Kendall Gill showed while he played in the NBA, to be honest.
He definitely wasn't that aggressive when Mike was stint Nima.
Oh, that's a little that right there is a little different. But I know one thing, in college he was amazing, yo. You can say what you want to say about him in the league, but when he got
when he was in college,
you know, he was putting in work, man. That's all I can say about that. But
he just didn't fulfill his expectations from. That's what I'm saying. Like, he had an okay NBA career, but I think we all expected him to
the
do
next
a
Jordan.
With
man,
there were
17,000 next Jordans. But Kiel, that just goes to show you that no matter how dominant you are on the collegiate level, there's something else you need when you get to the next
something
level.
Different.
To take it, you know, to play at a high to be an all-time great player. Because there are a lot of guys in college who are completely dominant. And they get to the NBA and have okay careers, but not what you thought they would be. And I can name tons of them, where you talk about Glenn Robinson. Harold Miner was always overrated. You know, we can say name player after player after player, but the fact of the matter is, I think at that point it's mental, because a lot of these guys, when they get out of college, they have that mentality like, I made it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, sure. You're right. You're right. You're definitely right.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's move on to another story with another former athlete. This one is about Adrian Dantley, the great Adrian Dantley, prolific scorer. He's now a crossing guard in Maryland.
Silver Spring, Maryland. Yes, Montgomery County. Shout out to Silver Spring.
And he makes, as a crossing guard, he makes about $14,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and when I first said this, I was like, oh, man, another guy. But
not another one.
But according to Adrian Dantley, he only works about an hour a day, and he gets health benefits, and that was his logic in doing that. He said he's not bad financially, but he says, yo, he wants some health benefits. Did you guys hear about the story?
Yeah, I heard
neck,
about it.
My back! My neck and my back! Oh!
I heard about the story, and reportedly, you know, after doing a little bit of digging even, the reporter came to the conclusion that Adrian Dantley is not broke. You don't have to worry about his finances. The dude is really just that cheap, because not only did he save some of his wealth from his playing career, he earned a pretty good wage on coaching staffs. Because if you recall, he was on the Nuggets staff, he was on the Mavericks staff, so he got some dough from that. And then on top of that, they say that his real estate portfolio is kind of diesel. His primary residence is free and clear, and it was $1 million back in 1990. So you know what it's worth now.
I heard that Adrian Dantley, not alone does he have money from playing, I heard he still got some allowance money from when he was a kid. Because they said when they did some digging, they found out this guy is notoriously cheap.
Yo,
and I guess
he's
not spending
a dime on the road. He's not taking you out to dinner. They said even when this dude was an all-star and he was getting bread, he's not going to spend it.
This moves him up on my list of favorite players
of all time. A lot of these cats could learn from Adrian Dantley, yo.
But you know what, though? At some point, Austin, doesn't it become like sort of like you're the opposite of the guy that spends too much? Like, at some point, you know, you got to chill, though. Like,
two sides. Well, yeah, what you're saying is it's two sides of the same coin.
Let's think about this. He was an assistant coach. But imagine the hours he put in as an assistant coach where he still got benefits. And I guess he figured, yo, 1 hour a day.
Me
getting up, you know, and doing what I have to do for 1 hour, make $15,000 as a part-time gig, and get full benefits.
Yo, do you think the kids know? You think the kids know who he is?
They have no clue.
They have no clue. They're walking by a 27 point per game score in the league.
They have no clue. They have no clue that some of the guys they look up to now, like, yo, he would give them whatever they want.
He would give them everything and more.
Super bucket.
Shout out to Casey Mack in the chat room. He says he wouldn't know where he signed up for them benefits, man. Hour a day for health benefits. Health benefits ain't no joke, man. Shout out to Obamacare. But, yo, next thing I want to talk about. Andrew Bynum had season ending. Well, I don't know how it's ending when he never started. Surgery on both knees. What do you guys think about this, man? Andrew Bynum in his season-ending knee surgery.
I think that I was premature in handing out the JoJo Award. I hate that dude, and I'm done.
Yo.
Boy, kill.
Yeah, I think it's just unfortunate because let's say the Sixers didn't make the deal and he stayed with the Lakers and he stayed healthy, so on and so forth, then they're like, oh, the Sixers should have pulled the trigger. Now, it kind of reminded me of like when the Sixers acquired Jeff Rulin, and he was always hurt, and then, like, you know, made the bad deal and gave up, passed on Brad Daugherty and got Roy Henson. So it just seemed like, it reminds me of the late 80s to early 90s Sixers that just kept missing out and making bad deals due to unfortunate injuries or, you know, giving up picks that turned out to be very adequate players. So it's just a sad story.
Now, let me ask you a question real quickly before we go to Austin. In our chat room, Leroy has a question. I don't know whether he's posing the question or he's making a statement. Who's worse off, Andrew Bynum or Greg Oden?
Oden.
Oden.
Because Oden hasn't even put anything up. I mean, at least Bynum won a couple of chips, had an all-star appearance.
First off, in that first chip, he didn't even play. So let's just say he didn't even play that one. So,
he's right though. He's right because Bynum has enough of a body of work.
First off, it's not about what they accomplished. It's about as of right now because, you know, Oden supposedly wants to play as well. And Bynum has degenerative knees, which means I don't know whether they heal. To my knowledge, that doesn't heal. So,
when you say worse off or better, are you talking physical condition? Are you talking financially? Are you talking upside
not
potential?
Not financially. In terms of what they can produce from this point on, who has a better chance of being productive in the association at this point?
I'm gonna say Bynum, just because I haven't seen the 45-year-old Greg Oden play in. I can't remember how long. I can't remember the last time I saw him.
Here's a caveat, though. You know Greg Oden ages backwards, so by the time you see him again,
oh, true. Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I don't know. I have no idea because Bynum, they say that he may need to replace his cartilage in both knees, and Greg Oden, as much as he desires to return to the game, it's been like, the last 3 years, he's been desiring to return to the game. So, there's a chance.
Hold up, yo. Shout out to Dr. Akil Bayon for the best answer to a question this year yet.
He said, I don't know,
and that's real.
Here's something real quick. And shout out to Ezra of Idiot Sports Talk, who's in our chat.
What's worse, poop or dookie?
He says, hold on. Here's this, though. Let's talk about this. He said that he honestly would consider re-signing him if he were the Sixers. Now, it's going to be hard. I want to hear Kill's answer. Austin, you are a Sixers fan, so I know off the bat.
Yeah, I'm Bill.
You don't want anything at all to do with him.
Yes.
Doc Bay, being objective, you're a Chicago Bulls fan, and looking at the Sixers as they're constructed, what would you do in this situation? Would you make him an offer at all? Now, of course, I don't think you give him the max, but would you try to get him cheaper?
Yeah, I would offer him, since you already traded Iguodala in picks, I would offer him a very low number and try to put as many contingencies in the contract as possible. I mean, so I know it's different than NFL contract, but I would put contingencies whereas, okay, if you only play 20 games or 10 games or you don't play any games, this is what we'll pay you. But if you play 60 games, you know, then your salary, you know, this incentive you'll get in millions of dollars.
Here's the challenge. Here's the challenge with that, because people are tossing that out there, Jimmy and Dr. Bate. People are tossing that out there. Yo, go back to him, offer him a 2-year deal.
I know where you're going with this. But go ahead.
Deal with $3 or $4 million a year, laden with some incentives, because people have done those types of deals in the NBA, even though it's the NBA. But there's going to be a team out there with the cap space to offer this guy the max, and they're going to be fooled by 7'2" and his skill set. Because let's face it, skill wise, he's top three in the league. Big man.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm talking purely skill. I'm not saying product, but purely skill. Somebody's going to take the shot.
I mean, that's true because there's already rumors of teams like Houston. And there was another team I heard as well. I think even a team like Boston, who has cap space as well as a veteran presence, so the gamble wouldn't be the same as the Sixers taking the gamble. You know what I mean? So,
no. No, you're right.
So they definitely could possibly come in and, you know, try to make a move on him if they, you know, if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Because the situation is completely different. When you got guys like Garnett and Pierce, they think they can keep him in check. See, that's the problem with him coming to Philadelphia. He was expected to be the leader. There is no veteran presence on the Sixers to kind of check the guy or.
You don't count Swaggy P as a veteran?
Swaggy P. No comment. Let's just leave it at this. His nickname is Swaggy P, and that's all I'm going to say on that. With that being said, Austin, before we move on in the show and get our guests or what have you, tell everybody how they can get in touch with us.
Absolutely. Listen, folks, check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report, our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, the show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email the generals at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the Memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise and get your swag up. Click the Blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All's Fair in Sports and War blog. Then, click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Yeah, we got that deal with Apple going. Download our free War Room Sports mobile app and to watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, just use Facebook or Twitter. While you're at it, click the follow to get updates, reminders about the show, and just to be one of the fans. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from our Facebook, Twitter, and chat room during the show. To call in and speak with us, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1. It's like raising your hand. If you want to talk, you're in the classroom, raise your hand, and one of the teachers will get to you. What's going on in the chat room?
Nothing much. It's time to bring our guest on, though. For those who don't know about our guest, let me just tell you briefly. During his 30-year career, Mr. Steinberg has represented over 150 professional athletes, and that includes football, baseball, basketball, boxing, Olympics. He's represented the number one pick overall in the NFL draft a record 8 times. He's currently writing a series discussing the issue of injuries in the NFL, and we definitely want to talk to him about this, the series called The Death of the NFL. So for the first time, I'd like to welcome Mr. Lee Steinberg to the War Room. How are you, sir?
I'm great. What an honor, and I didn't even have to raise my hand.
Lee, how are you?
I'm great. You know, your voice is so good, you ought to do those phone recordings for a living.
I would, but the ladies like it too much, and they call in, and my wife gets jealous, and you know how it goes.
I do.
Let's just jump right into it. Because we've been reading the articles, and you know, the excellent articles, but we want to know, just going back a little bit, what inspired you to want to become a sports agent, and are you currently still representing any athletes?
I was living in the dorms at UC Berkeley going to law school, and they moved the freshman football team into the dorm. There really wasn't any sports law then, and Steve Bartkowski was the number one player picked in the 1975 NFL draft, asked me to represent him. So there I was, brimming with legal experience, never having practiced law before, and I had the first pick in the first round, and there was a World Football League competing against an NFL, teams like the Shreveport Steamer and the Chicago Wind. And we were able to get the largest rookie contract in NFL history. It eclipsed O.J. Simpson and Joe Namath, who were the previous standard bearers. And I remember we arrived in Atlanta, and there were the airport the night before the signing, and there were Klieg lights flashing in the sky. A huge crowd was pressed up against the police line, and the first thing we heard was, "We interrupt the Johnny Carson show to bring you a special news bulletin. Steve Bartkowski and his attorney have just arrived at the Atlanta airport."
Wow.
So I sort of looked at him the way that Dorothy looked at Toto when they got to Munchkin Land. We are not in Berkeley anymore. But that's when I saw the tremendous idol worship and veneration that athletes are held in communities across the country. And that's where I thought, you know what? We can make a real difference if these athletes would retrace their roots and go back to the high school, college, and professional community and set up charitable and community programs and really make a difference and trigger imitative behavior.
Okay, okay. Lee, what qualities do you look for in an athlete to determine whether or not he or she would be a good fit for representation?
It's a matter of profiling. The type of athlete I want is very focused on understanding that the career span's short, there'll be a necessity to plan for a second career. They can make a difference and an impact, whether it was Warwick Dunn's Homes for the Holidays, where he made a down payment for single mothers and the first home they'll ever own, or Warren Moon's Crescent Moon Foundation, where he sent hundreds of kids to college on his scholarships, or Derek Thomas dealing with children's literacy and dyslexia in Kansas City. They have a real opportunity to make a difference, and they can build a great platform for the future. So you look into family structure, you know, willingness to think outside the square, and for that type of human being. Because the reality is that if I'm outside that type of model, then I'm probably not going to appeal to an athlete.
Mm. You're looking at you're examining character. You're examining an athlete's character.
It's a critical key, because whether it was boxing where I helped Lennox Lewis, or you know, football with players like Troy Aikman and Steve Young and Warren Moon and Bruce Smith. Those players will make an impact in the world. They will play a long time, and there'll be activity centers. And those are the people that fans really want to see in the endorsement world.
Sure, sure. Lee, this is B. Austin. True honor to have you on. My question is, we're fairly certain that there are distinct differences in representing a motorsports driver versus a boxer versus an NFL player versus an NBA player, etc. Can you speak on some of those differences and how you've been able to balance the needs of so many clients in your portfolio across the variety of sports?
There are big differentials. NBA players, for example, where I represented Craig Anthony and John Starks and Wayne Simmien and Austin Crozier, that tends to be much less a team sport, because these players have been identified very early in their lives and courted by AAU teams and endorsers and colleges, and that it is much more hands-on than, say, football. Boxing, where I worked with Oscar De La Hoya and Lennox Lewis and a little bit with Evander Holyfield, is a sport where part of it is dealing with their entourages, which can be quite extensive, and it's much more political. In football, I probably should have gone to med school instead of law school to really be able to help the players, because the injuries are so severe that a large part of it is counseling athletes through injury, getting them second opinions, and all the rest of them. In individual sports like golf and tennis, a lot of it, there's no ability to negotiate the purses, so most of it's about endorsements.
Gotcha. So definitely a variety of experiences and different nuances that you kind of have to master in each arena. You're well known for your philanthropic efforts. It is even documented that you insist that your clients' contracts include clauses that require them to give back to their hometown, high school, universities, or charitable foundations. And you talked about that a little bit. How have you coupled this message within the advice and strategies that you offer to your clients in a manner that kind of convinces them to do the right thing?
Well, first of all, they've got to have those values to start with that come from family or come from religion or come from somewhere. But the enemy for athletes is the concept of self-absorption, you know, where they say, well, enough about me. Can we talk about how you feel about me? That's self-absorption. And the key is to get an athlete to the point of empowerment where they can realize their own strength and mental capacity and the ability to function in the world. So these programs allow them the opportunity to do two things. Number one is to really make an impact. And it comes in so many different ways. If it's Edger and James, he endowed a scholarship at the University of Miami, or Troy Aikman and Steve and Eric Karros did the same thing, or Kerry Collins at Penn State. If it's a high school scholarship fund, it gives them the opportunity to get out of themselves and start to meet people away from the sport that can be really critical in their second career. So you take a player like Daron Cherry in Kansas City. He had a Cherry Foundation. Then, when he retired, he was granted the Anheuser-Busch distributorship in Kansas City, which is sort of a license to print money. And then he ended up, I introduced him to Wayne Weaver, and he became one of the first minority owners, not in the fact that he was black, but first ex-football player to own part of a team in a long time. And I did that with Ray Childress in Houston. So you have the ability to make this the foundation and nexus of what will come later. Plus, I wouldn't want to do a career that didn't end up making an impact in the world. So whether it's human relations, prejudice, I had Steve Young and Esther De La Hoya cut a PSA that said real men. No, their PSA said prejudice is foul play. And Lennox Lewis cut one that said real men don't hit women. So the theory is they've got the ability to permeate the perceptual screen that young people put up in front of them. They may not listen to commercials. They may not listen to authority figures or their parents or a teacher. But if you can find the right symbol, they can make an impact and actually trigger positive change. So this is the work that is critical for them to do so that they develop every part of their personality and are able to be very successful. And so when you look at them in years, they're owning successful businesses, they're the owners, no more Joe Louis as the greeter, and they can make an impact.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Lee, you're widely recognized as one of the primary inspirations behind the Jerry Maguire film. You even made a brief appearance in the movie, but we would like to know, did they consult with you while making it, and do you think the end product was an accurate portrayal of the life of a sports agent during that time period? You know, things have changed, but...
Well, actually, Cameron Crowe, the director, called me in 93 and asked if he could follow me around like a fly on the wall to do a film that would feature as its lead character a sports agent. So he went to the 93 draft where I had Drew Bledsoe. He came up when we went with and met with Bill Parcells. He came to Pro Scouting Day at SC. He came to my Super Bowl party. He came to a series of games with me, and he came to the league meetings in 1993, and he would be a fly on the wall, or I'd introduce him to people, but then I told him stories, just hour and hours of stories, and he spent time in my office. And then once he had written the script, I had to vet it to make sure that the willing suspension of disbelief that's necessary to keep you in a film and not think it's a lampoon or a spoof wasn't hurt. And then they came to my office and they took my yellow legal pads. They took pictures where my head was next to Drew Bledsoe, and then it was replaced by Tom Cruise's head. They took my my awards, and suddenly they became Jerry Maguire's. They took a picture out the window of our office that, you know, became the backdrop. And then I actually had to do things on the set, like Jerry O'Connell, who was the quarterback. I had to show him how to throw a football because he had gone to NYU and he was an actor. And then I took Cuba Gooding Jr. with me down to the Super Bowl in Phoenix, and I made him pretend for the whole week he was just a wide receiver and he was a client of mine, and got him, you know, into role. You know, it was a lot of life that went into that, and you know, I'm the technical consultant on the film and got the screen credit and all the rest of that. After that, I worked on Any Given Sunday with Oliver Stone that had Al Pacino and Cameron Diaz.
Jamie Foxx,
I was getting to that because there was a rapper who I won't identify who was the original quarterback, and so Oliver kept asking me what I thought of his throwing, and I said, well, not to be sexist, but he throws like a girl. So they brought all these people in and worked with them, and at the end of it, Oliver said, well, what do you think? I said, Oliver, I represent half the starting quarterbacks in the NFL. If you want to double this guy the whole movie, go ahead. But you certainly can't film him in action scenes. So they fired that rapper, and that gave a young comedic actor his first dramatic opportunity, and that was Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, wow.
And both of those are two of our favorite movies. Okay, Lee, let's switch gears to your thoughts on the most pressing issue in the NFL. What is the primary reason that you've gone as far as labeling the concussion issue in the NFL a ticking time bomb and potentially the death of the NFL?
Because back in the 80s, I would watch my players get concussions. We'd go to doctors. There were no answers. And as late as 1994, Dr. Elliot Pellman, who was a league physician, said that there was no problem with concussions or multiple concussions, no long-term health consequences they could find, and one close to another didn't make any difference, so you could get popped twice week to week, and that they didn't find any compelling evidence about that, so players didn't know. I got so concerned because I felt like I was an enabler helping people I loved and cared for, and saying I was helping in their lives, but all I was doing was making them money and developing a second career. I couldn't protect them from this. So we went to, I held a series of concussion conferences in Southern California in the 90s in Newport Beach, and then one in Los Angeles where I got the leading neurologists from across the country. And they still didn't really have the results, But we ask that blocking and tackling with the head be taken out of the sport, that we have a neurologist on the sideline, a whole white paper, not much changed. So I did it again in 2006 with the Concussion Institute up in the Marina del Rey in Los Angeles, and then we had the goods. I had the neurologist had reports that said three or more occasions a exponentially higher rate of Alzheimer's, premature senility, dementia, ALS, greatly elevated rates of depression. And it started to strike me that this was a ticking time bomb, because most concussions aren't even identified. So that if you take the fact that an offensive lineman hitting a defensive lineman at the beginning of every play creates a low-level concussive event, and the definition of concussion is not being knocked out, it's a blow to the head or neck occasioning a change in brain function, then theoretically you have players who in high school, college, 20 home games, 70 plays a game in practice, could suffer 10,000 subconcussive hits without one ever being diagnosed. And the truth is 99% of the concussions are not diagnosed. So I became terrified about it, and we pushed the NFL, and Goodell has done more than all his predecessors combined, but the basic problem is that we've discovered chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which has ended in a syndrome that has had, the Dave Duersons and Junior Sales kill themselves. We've had, this is going to be startling damage. It's not just the NFL. It's every sport that has collision, and it's the college and high school level too, because those young brains are still in formation. So the how it threatens football is a couple ways. First of all, you ultimately, once all this information gets out, unless they dramatically change, are going to have parents, like Tom Brady's father said, not having their children allowed to play football. And the second part of it is these lawsuits have a real chance of winning, and it puts economic liability, insurance liability that could make it prohibitive to play professional football.
Well, Lee, with these things known, as we read part one of your series on the death of football, the low-level concussive hits seem to be as big a factor as the major concussions that we actually see. And so what's going on every time that an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman come together on interior plays? Like, with facts like this, is it even possible to eliminate concussions from football?
Not to eliminate them. What makes this all the more compelling is the fact that when I started representing players, Fred Dreyer played defensive end for the LA Rams at 220 pounds. A big offensive tackle plays 240-250 pounds, and their 40 times were different. They just timed an offensive lineman over 300 pounds running a 4.65 40. Now, if you've never stood by people running a 40, a body moving that fast in motion, hitting a stationary object, is a frightening collision to think about. And they have wide receivers. One ran a 4.17. Well, and back when I started, a 4.6 was really fast for a wide receiver. And to think of a lineman below like 5.3, 5.4 was impossible. Now, if you're thinking there's not much difference in those figures, if I showed you a tape in slow motion and you saw how many steps there are embodied in those differentials, it's a huge difference. So the point is the physics of the hit have changed. And so what can we do? Well, first of all, we can coach kids from when they're young not to use the head in blocking and tackling. It doesn't take that much out of the game. Second of all, we can make sure that we've got mandated baseline testing and other ways to pick it up. It doesn't pick up the low level concussive hit because no one's complaining and no one's lying on the field. But we need to do a better job of that. I've been researching with some doctors a concussion antidote drink that seems to have a impact long term on health. Awareness is key. We need to be charting these concussions. And older players have to be willing to tell younger players what the consequences are. See, every athlete is, as you both well know, is in a state of denial. They've been taught from Little League and Pop Warner to ignore pain, to be stoic, not to get left out. You know, real men play injured. And so in a general person's value system, long-term health is the most important thing. And much after that, much below that, playing a pro career, and much below that, playing in a given season, and much below that, playing in a given game. And the lowest is playing a play. To the athlete, they turn that on its head. Long-term health is an abstraction. The most important thing is that play. Being involved in that play, not losing your place in the starting lineup, not losing your opportunity. So it's a very difficult group to work with. It wasn't like my athletes were really thrilled that I was out talking about it. It was almost like death. Well, you know you're going to die, but you don't spend all your time obsessing about it. You know, we know there are injuries in football. So it's difficult. It requires parents. It requires wives. It requires families. It requires agents. It requires coaches and trainers and owners and athletic directors all to be sort of in on the cautionary part of it.
That's a great point. I mean, and that's your question. You mentioned Roger Goodell and said that he has done more than previous commissioners. But what do you say to the folks who constantly complain that Roger Goodell is ruining the sport with the new rules geared towards player safety while ignoring the fact that the league is being sued by over 1,400 retired players?
I understand. And let's just remember that some people who complain about the rules changes have obviously not stood on the sidelines of a football game. I mean, they obviously have no idea of the amount of force and impact. It's like when you hear someone say, oh, that guy's not tough. Oh, really? Please, just go stand behind center, just get hit once, and tell me if you can walk for the next month. I mean, these players withstand extraordinary pain. When I say Goodell's done more, it's because the previous commissioners would not talk about this subject. The league doctor, I told you how much in denial he was. So at least the denial's broken. We don't know what really is going on in the commissioner's mind because of the threat of the liability. And somehow, once that gets all settled, I noticed they approved a rules change either today or last night that has to do with hitting with the crown of the head. And again, people will say, oh, what do you want to do? Put a dress on the player. Oh, you're destroying the game. Oh, really? Yeah, the game with the enforcement of those rules was so destroyed this year that of the 90 Nielsen-rated shows many weeks, the top five rated nighttime shows were NFL nighttime football. And that meant that number three, which was Football in America and was a pregame show, was outdrawing NCIS and Two and a Half Men and Dancing with the Stars and American Idol. So the sport's never been more popular, and these adjustments take nothing out of it.
Yeah, great point. Great point. We don't know the age of your children or if any of them have played football in the past, so we'll make this question a hypothetical one. If we could hit the reset button, but you still know everything that you know now about the head injuries, would you allow your son or sons to play football at a young age? Where would you stand on that?
I had two boys, and they knew and experienced everything. And I gave them every cautionary note. And what do you think? They both played high school football. So it's a difficult struggle. And it's just a dilemma. You see, here's what makes the concussion issue different. Every athlete knows if you're going to play football, for example, you're going to do damage to the joints, and when you turn 40, it's going to be difficult to pick up your kid without aches and pains. It's another thing not to be able to identify that child. And what separates this threat from everything else is this affects consciousness, memory, personality, what it means to be a human being. All that gets stolen in dementia. And it's very difficult. So if we can invest millions of dollars and figure out how to send a space ship to Jupiter or Mars, we can surely invest better in helmetry, face guards, preventative substances, and many other ways to try to deal with this issue.
Yeah, this is true. This is absolutely true. We just had a question pop in on Twitter before we get you out of here. Sid Ziegler of Outsports.com, he had a question in light of what has happened with Manti Te'o and the NFL asking him about his sexuality and, you know, whether there are players who are gay players in the NFL. And how do you think the NFL is handling this situation?
Well, the question was outrageous. It's just irrelevant. I would have said 25 years ago, and did say, that a player had been better off to say he was a communist than he was gay, because that's where the culture was. I didn't think it was right then, but that's where the culture was. Today, there's a real age differential in how people think about all sorts of issues, from recreational drugs to you know, gay marriage, the rest of it. And I think that the sport is actually ready, all sports are ready for someone to be gay and to be part of the team unit. One of the reasons we haven't had as many gays in team sports, I'm sure, although I can't prove this, is that when men turn teen, the cruelty towards the whole concept of gayness is pretty intense. And I don't know about your school, but mine, people were always lisping and making fun of gays and all the rest.
Oh,
it can't be that. It cannot be that comfortable in a locker room. So why would you pick a team sport where you're going to have to hide everything you were? But this whole life is changing, and I think people would be I think there's increasing evidence that players would be just fine. You know what it's like. You guys are too young, but there was actually a time when they didn't allow blacks in Major League Baseball, you know, and they said, oh, I'd rather quit than play with one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then along comes Jackie Robinson and a bunch of other people. And you know what? No one can remember that time anymore.
Right.
And when I was a kid, they didn't have female sports writers or sportscasters, you know. And, we're never letting them in the locker room, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, you can't remember a time where that wasn't there. So the point is that you got the president of the United States coming out for gay marriage. Somehow, I think athletes can handle it.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for answering the question.
Definitely agree. Lee, we have thoroughly enjoyed you. You are now a part of the War Room family, so we'll look forward to having you back on and picking up the dialogue. But you have to allow our listeners to know what you're doing, how they can follow you, what your next moves are. Do your commercial, if you will.
Oh, my commercial. Well, it happens that today is my 3-year sober birthday. So, and I'm getting ready to relaunch, and we'll do representation in football, baseball, basketball, soccer, hockey, mixed martial arts, and other sports that'll power a big marketing arm, and that will market teams, leagues, other individuals, corporations, and then a studio, not in the brick and mortar sense, but in the virtual sense, it's a sports theme, motion pictures, television, video games, videotape, how they can follow me is I tweet at Steinberg Sports, and we have a blog site that probably says something like that. And yes, even an old Rip Van Winkle can be pulled into social media with careful training and low expectations.
Yeah, we see you tweeting often, and you know that's the way things have changed. So,
yeah, that is
I'm
the
pretty
way
sure
of
as
the
an
future.
Agent that will change a lot of things too. Because
so imagine this now, all right? So when I started, I'm in my parents' card room. I have a rotary phone, which I'm sure you'll remember. and if you called me and I was on the line, it did a strange thing. It rang busy. And I was my own secretary. I typed on a typewriter. Again, I'm sure you remember those, an electric typewriter. And there were no cell phones. So, you know, you needed a big roll of coins. So you'd spend a lot of time in phone booths, you know, like Superman or Clark Kent. And someone who went to sleep then and woke up today would not recognize, you know, the world of mobile phones that you can pay for anything with and get used to get onto a flight and this whole new world of social media. When I want my daughter, I text her. The only alternative to that, if I want her to respond, is just yell out the window and hope she hears somehow.
Yeah, and also, I guess, you know, trying to keep your players out of trouble with their use of social media, that would make the job a little different as well because...
Well, there's no concept of... You're right. There's no concept of privacy anymore.
True.
In other
True.
Words, the cell phone means that there's a camera wherever. Someone can be having a private party at their home and not even think they're in public, and that moment, you know, will show up in 2 seconds. Not only will the picture be taken, it'll be up onto every form of social media in microseconds.
Yeah.
This
anyway,
is the world we live in.
This is absolutely where we live in, and it's changed dramatically. We definitely want to thank you for your time. You know, we really enjoyed it. You've been very informative. Where can the people read the articles?
They can either go onto our website I write on Forbes.com, Yahoo.com. A lot of times they go up on the Huffington Post.
Yeah, you're all over the place.
So,
you're all over. As a matter of fact, what we'll do is this, Lee. We'll post them on our website for all of our listeners so they can you know, read your articles because they were very informative and it kind of gives you a different look at what's going on in the NFL. But we'll post them for our audience and, you know, give them your Twitter address or what have you. But we definitely want to thank you for your time and we appreciate everything that you've done and that you're going to do, you know, coming up in the future.
My pleasure, guys.
Absolutely.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Lee Steinberg, everybody. Wow.
Yeah, a lot of information right there, right?
Yeah, a new perspective to look at, you know, the whole concussion issue and player safety and even the perspective of the player, you know, Lee having had interactions with guys, has an understanding of the dangers and what they go through that you know, a fan just can't get. We got to get into these hot topics, man.
Yeah, we definitely do. Went over a little bit talking, but it was great information, man. But, you know, Austin, just jump right into the hot topics so we can keep the show moving.
Hot topics is Audible. If your schedule's too hectic to read as much as you want, well, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you have to do is visit Audible, sign up for a free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can be listening to the latest bestsellers hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done at the same time. March Madness. Gentlemen, who's going to win the whole thing?
Man, listen, all I want to say is it's funny because, you know, everybody is filled out their pools at this point, you know, started watching. But I was laughing because I have a friend who actually went to Pitt and picked Pitt to win the whole thing. So I was clowning him about picking Pitt to win the whole thing. And I'm like, listen, you're just being a homer. And he's giving me statistics and reasons of why Pitt's going to win. And they lost already. as a favorite, they're already gone. We all love March Madness. This is, you know, a great time. But you have certain teams that just always sell the farm, you know what I mean? So it's been some close games already. I mean, you have Memphis and St. Mary's, and Memphis is 6 seed. They barely got out of there. You have Pitt as a higher seed losing. It's just, you know, very interesting, man. But in terms of who I have winning the whole thing, I still got a couple pools, and I picked all chalk. But I have Indiana winning on one pool, and the other pool I have Louisville winning. Now, who I think's going to win, I have no clue, yo. I'm not even going to pretend. I love when people pretend that they've been watching college basketball all season, knowing they're lying. So I'm going to keep it being. I haven't been watching all season. I have watched a lot of college basketball. You know, I watched a lot of Otto Porter because I think, you know, I like the way he plays the game.
Yeah, Otto.
I watched Louisville play. The one team who is my sleeper, I'll give you that, is St. Louis, because I think St. Louis got a bunch of grown men on their team. Rest in peace, Rick Majerus. But I like their team. But in terms of if I had to give you a pick, I would say Louisville. But that's not really saying much. They're the number one overall seed, so you know.
Dr. Bayon, who's gonna win it? Who's gonna win it all? Who do you have?
In my pool, like, I think each year when I do a pool, I get I'm less and less invested because I know as I'm picking this, anything can happen, and I'm thinking, okay, I just need to pick the right upsets. So my pool has Ohio State winning the whole thing, and I forgot who I had beaten, but I know I had Ohio State winning it. I don't even really like Ohio State, but just that's how my pool ended up. So I remember last year I picked Missouri. I picked Missouri to win it all last year, and they lost to Norfolk State in the first round.
There you go. Let me ask you, gentlemen, this. Any interesting games from earlier today? Because I guess things are really getting underway. This was a major day. What did you guys see?
Well, like I said, to me, the Pitt game was one. I just saw it's kind of a microcosm of the entire season. Now, you had a couple teams just handle their business, but there's a lot of parity in college basketball, and we can do a whole show on the reasons why. We all know what they are. But I saw a lot of close games where, you know, you had teams 6-11 fighting. The games that, you know, generally shouldn't be close were close, but that's the way college basketball is now. You know what I mean? Pitt shot, okay? They lost. But overall, you just see that the games are going to be close. So I kind of look at this one or two ways. Some ways it makes for better basketball, but I don't know if it's necessarily better basketball because some of these teams just can't shoot. It's bad offense. And the commentators like to tell you that this is a defensive struggle, but it really isn't. Yo, Jokers just can't shoot. Some people like the parity. Me personally, I kind of like college basketball when there's like a bad guy or a David, so to speak, where there's a team that, you know, there really is no David and Goliath stories. You can say based upon seeding there is, but when you look at the records and how the teams play, there really isn't that story. So if you like parody, you may like this tournament. If you're like me and you like to watch the big, you know, the David and Goliath story, then you may not like this tournament, but that's just my personal opinion.
Well, I've chosen a different route, and I'm going to let my listeners, our listeners in on that. I've chosen to forego March Madness altogether, and I'm watching the NIT tournament. So if anybody wants to get with me on the NIT tournament, at War Room Sports on Twitter, at Thought Epiphany, and we'll have a great time dealing with
the
NIT tournament.
What is your reason behind that? Give us your reason behind it.
Just to be an outlier.
Well, listen, though. I mean, the fact of the matter is you're just trying to be different. I get that.
Of course.
This is different than most college basketball seasons because there is no, like, dominant team. Like, Louisville is the number one overall seed, but if they actually lost, I don't think too many people will be surprised if they lost in the second and third. I mean, I just don't think so. Like, there really is no, you know.
Fellas,
like,
we're beating a dead horse with these whack NCAA teams in other news.
Hold real quick, though. Last thing I want to say about the tournament. Gonzaga barely got out of there, and they're a number one seed. Now, again, they are Gonzaga, and many people have been calling them frauds. The fact of the matter is they almost lost to, like, Southern. Like, they almost lost to a team that's a 16 seed. Like,
man, shout out to the MEAC. Shout out to the MEAC, yo.
So this, in my opinion, man, this is one of those things where there's a lot of parity in the game. Doc Bay, you play D1 college basketball. You know, you're also a coach. So my question to you is, before we move on, do you like it better when there's parity, or do you like the whole David and Goliath story like I do?
I like the David and Goliath story. I mean, like, now it's like all you need is a team with three-year starters or four-year starters that are seniors with strong-minded guards, and they're going to beat, you know, the teams with, like, the freshmen and sophomores that were McDonald's All-Americans a lot of times. So that's why you had a parity. I liked it.
Grown men versus kids.
Yeah, that's the case. But I liked when we went into LSU as a 30-point underdog, and we're up one with 8 minutes left with three NBA players on their team and no overseas players on our team. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
when we went to
just
Carolina.
From my chat room,
we went to Carolina, same thing. They had an NFL player and Peppers and two NBA players, and we're down 9 at the half. We're feeling like that's a victory. But, you know.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. Couple things in our chat room. Skyview Kevin, shout out to him, although he's a Raiders fan, and I barely give Raiders fans shout outs. He said in college basketball in general just lacks shooters. And Joel says even free throw shooters. Guys just can't, like, shoot these days. Like, whether it's the three, the mid-range game, like, no one in college can shoot. And I just get sick and tired of the broadcaster saying it's great defense. When you watch the game, it's nobody around you. People just – how is it great defense when you're missing the majority of your free throws? Who's defending?
It's not great defense. It's really the degradation of the sport overall. And we see it on the NBA level, and we kind of look past it because you've got sensational athletes. But skill, there isn't a premium that's placed on skill. Shooting isn't a sexy skill. Setting picks isn't a sexy skill. A lot of the skills are eroding in the sport, and it shows up at the high school level, and it shows up at the collegiate level. So shout out to the death of basketball, too.
But let's move on, though.
Yeah. Major rule changes in the NFL. 2 days ago, or yesterday, actually, the tuck rule is eliminated. How do you guys feel about the tuck rule to begin with, and then talk a little bit about its elimination? Doc Bay, the tuck rule.
I mean, that's wild that they're eliminating it now. I mean, it helped the Patriots get to a Super Bowl and win, and then now it's like the Patriots haven't, you know, won a Super Bowl in several years now, and now they're taking it away. So, yeah, I just think that's whack. They should have never instituted it. And then after they instituted it, they just showed that they were wrong and they kind of cheated for the Patriots anyway. So,
well, I mean, I'm not going to talk a lot about this. We did a video, Field Vision, our latest NFL episode of Field Vision is on our YouTube channel. But all I'm going to say is I think they got rid of the tuck rule at the right time. Allowing it to screw the Raiders was the right thing to do. But now that that's done, you can get rid of it. That's all I have to say.
So you're all about screwing the Raiders, which I definitely can see how Raiders fans would be irate at the removal of the rule, since it did end up screwing them. The big one, is the crown of the helmet rule, or as here on War Room Sports as we like to call it, the Kurt Coleman rule. Jimmy, talk to us a little bit about the Kurt Coleman rule, the crown of the helmet rule.
Yeah, this was the actual rule which got a lot of people upset in terms of the running back. Once he gets past 3 yards, past the line of scrimmage, can't lower his head to hit a defender. And I guess it applies to a receiver as well. It's funny because, you know, Lee just brought it up as well. Unless you've actually been on the sidelines or played in the game, you don't understand that. But I understand both sides of it. where the game is going, and I mentioned this yesterday as well, I think that the game is going to completely change. And I'm not saying that in 10 years we'll be playing 1-2-3 hold or we'll be playing flag football. But at the end of the day, the NFL is – now, whether they're doing it for the right reasons or not, all these rules that were implemented was try to give the appearance that they're trying to do something about safety. Some say they really don't care. They're only doing it because of lawsuits. And that may be the case. I can't speak to their motive, but I can say that when you look at all the rules that were put in place, the rules on special teams, the Kurt Coleman rule, as we call it, it's all about player safety. They have to do something, you know, so
this is
what they're doing. But I think about this rule, Austin. The last thing I want to say about this rule is I don't know if it'll have an adverse effect, because if I'm a linebacker or a safety coming upon a running back and I know he can't lower his shoulder on me, I'm going to take my shoulder and I'm going to try to, knock him out of the game. Like, I don't have to worry about him lowering his shoulder. He has to run high like Ricky Waters. Okay, I'm going to tee off on him.
Yeah.
It's all about leverage and getting low. And if you don't have the ability to do that because you can't duck your helmet, what can you do? And also, how do you turn that off as a running back? Because that's part of your instinct. You've been playing this way since Pop Warner, lowering your shoulder or your head to get extra yards. So I want to see how they're going to call it this year.
From middle school on, you're taught that the lowest man wins. That's the bottom line of football, whether you're talking at the line of scrimmage, on a goal line situation or short yardage, or you're talking out in the open field, the lowest man wins. And so this is going to play out really interesting. I think that the rule change fundamentally is ridiculous. The motivations, okay, are cool. We just had Lee Steinberg on, and he shared with us some of the consequences of years of high impact sports. And so, you know, where heads are concerned, and you have head injuries, I get it from a safety standpoint. I even get the economics that the NFL is looking at. 1,400 players in a class action lawsuit really leads to a multi-billion dollar liability to them. So they're doing everything they can to make a case in court that they are making changes to protect the players. But ultimately, the product is for the fans. And I just get the sense that some of these rule changes are headed towards a very, very watered down product. And so I'm disappointed. I think there are other ways and other things that can be changed. If you would like to hear my thoughts or hear our thoughts, you know, again, at War Room Sports on Twitter is the way to get at us. The phone lines, call in, give us your thoughts. 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted if you have a thought on the rule changes, something that you want to get off your chest. Definitely come holler at the generals on that. Dr. Bayon, we didn't really hear from you on the rule changes. What are your thoughts on the crown of the helmet rule?
The first thing I thought of was, you know, you're playing. Let me give a shout out to Omar Barlow and Brian Smith, who were seniors when I was a junior playing football at Central High School in Philly, and I played tight end / wide receiver, and they were fullback and running back. And then those cats, they started linebacker, but on offense, they were the 3 and the 4 back, and they would lower their heads, and they would crush cats, like knock guys over left and right. So I think of that, and then I think of Adrian Peterson. I think of Earl Campbell back in the day. I think of Christian Okoye. Like that Christian Okoye hit on Steve Atwater, who was actually Steve Atwater hit on Christian Okoye. You know, if Okoye lowered his head lower and he got knocked out, would he still have been fined? So that's just a question. It kind of takes away from what the running back can do. So now they're going to be able to be tackled easier. So,
I also want to bring to you, Doc Bay, that I actually brought this up on the video, but Joel just said the same thing I said in our chat room, is will running backs become obsolete? Is this going to make it more of a pass-happy league? Because
we're headed towards arena football.
There are a lot of teams that don't have, you know, feature backs or running backs that run that way. But it's going to – teams like Cleveland, where Trenton Richardson is just getting started. You have, you know, a beast mode.
Beast mode.
You have you know, a lot of running backs that run hard, and this is what they do. Adrian Peterson, you brought him up. He comes to mind. I mean, are these teams just going to be more pass-happy? The league is already considered to be a passing league. Will this, like, lean towards more passes because the running back becomes less effective? I don't think it will affect the goal line situation because, LaRoy brought that up. But the thing about the goal line is it has to be 3 yards past the line of scrimmage, and I think that's maybe why they put that rule in place. But, you know, in terms of the rest of the field, is it going to make the running back less effective or –
I don't know. I'm having a hard time. We're going to have to see how this plays out over the course of the next 2 to 3 seasons. We're going to have to see how the officials interpret these new rules. I have a feeling that the first 3 to 4, maybe even 6 weeks of the season, we're going to see a lot of flags. We're going to see a lot of complaining. I've even heard some defensive players. Shout out to Joe Hayden of the Cleveland Browns, a DMV area native. He came on Twitter last night and said, "I feel bad for NFL running backs. This is really, you know, this is taken away from their game, and I'm on defense." So NFL players are kind of speaking up. Emmitt Smith has spoken up. Jim Brown has spoken up. A number of past players, Jerome Bettis, has spoken up against this rule. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out and how it's interpreted by officials. In other news, some major free agent movements. Starting safety for the Baltimore Ravens Super Bowl team just passed. Ed Reed is now a Texan. And Bears starting middle linebacker for 13 seasons, Brian Urlacher, has decided he's not returning to the Bears. They offered him 1 year at $2 million salary. What are you guys' thoughts?
Man, I really have nothing to say about Ed Reed. Like, this is one of those things where it's like he's on the other side of his career, whether you want to believe it or not. Austin, I know you're a huge Ed Reed fan. So instead of me sitting here and saying anything bad about him, I just won't say anything at all. In terms of Urlacher, that offer was disrespectful considering what he's meant to the team and what he's been to the team. Now I'm hearing reports that he's possibly just retiring altogether. No one knows. So we'll see what happens there. It's going to be difficult to see Urlacher playing a different jersey, as well as Ed Reed, because those guys are synonymous with both teams. But at the end of the day, this is just another just goes to show you, it's another reason to see that this is still a business. Outside of it being a sport, it's still a business, and you have to cut your ties and move on. You know what I mean? It kind of reminded me of the whole controversy in terms of the Ravens letting everybody go. Because another one's going is Ed Reed. People are saying, well, Ed Reed's another one. The Ravens letting everybody go. And I was thinking, right, the Ravens are probably rebuilding for the future. What's the best time to rebuild? Wouldn't the best time be right after winning the Super Bowl? That buys you a little bit of time, don't you think? So this is a business.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
You have to conduct it as such. Even though people get emotional and attached to players and teams, they still have a business to run. So I think it's the best decision for both teams. But I wouldn't even have made him that offer. I would have rather than just say, listen, you know, we're going in a different direction than to offer him what they offered him. You know what I mean?
just kept it 100. Gentlemen, the Pro Bowl will continue. Oh, I'm sorry. Doc Bay, any thoughts on Ed Reed moving to the Texans and Urlacher parting ways with the Bears?
I mean, yeah, those guys, well, first of all, this would happen.
I'm here to tell you, Nino Brown says, your services are no longer needed in the community.
The thing with Ed Reed and Urlacher, it's basically what the Patriots and the Eagles have done for years. When aging stars get to that point, not when they fall off, but about a year or 2 years before they have that drop-off, they get rid of them and let them go. So that's all it is, and everybody's making a big deal out of it. And we knew it would happen. In the Ravens' case, I think it's going to hurt more that they lost Anquan Boldin, but they probably weren't expecting to do anything next year. Like, I don't expect the Ravens to make the playoffs next year.
but they're going to have all their money tied up into a quarterback.
Wow.
It's funny you
yeah.
said that because Joel just said the same thing in the chat room 2 minutes before you said it. He said they weren't going to win ish with what they had anyway. So
good point. Good point.
And that's why I said if you're going to rebuild, isn't the best time to be after a Super Bowl win? You got a little cushion there. You know, you just won a championship. Smart.
Yo, the Pro Bowl will continue. Do y'all care?
Not at all. Next story.
Okay. Well, still unsigned, free agency.
I'm here to tell you, Nino Brown says your services are no longer needed in the community.
And that's going out to the Pro Bowl. Victor Cruz, Darrell Revis, and Greg Jennings. Greg Jennings is actually signed.
He just signed.
So, Vic Cruz and Darrell Revis still unsigned. Gentlemen, who's going to fork over that money?
Man, Victor Cruz, it's crazy because, he's dominant, man. Like, somebody better step up and sign him. I know my Cowboys, we don't need him. Teams are strapped.
Don't they have that protection against him, that first round?
Yeah, they have a first round tender. So Vic really isn't going anywhere. Dominant as he is, Akil. This is not taken away from him because I'm as much of a Victor Cruz fan as I can be while still rooting for the Eagles. I think dude is uber talented, but he's not worth a first round draft pick. I wouldn't offer a second round draft pick for him as a slot receiver. So I think that you're going to see him stay right where he is. They may even franchise him, which would be a pretty big payday. It's going to be more than he'll get salary wise on a long term deal. I see him staying with the Giants. Darrell Revis is a completely different story. Now, here's an interesting story. My man is coming back from major knee surgery and rehabbing at 28 or 27? Either way, he's right in the middle of his prime, and he wants to be the highest paid defensive player in the universe. He's looking for something in the 11 to 13 million a season range.
Yeah. Revis renegotiates his contract every 6 weeks.
Every half. Every positive
my
half.
My question is this, though. Where did Austin Watt sign?
Where did who sign?
Namdi.
Namdi. Where did Namdi sign?
Namdi is
signed
still,
yet?
No, Namdi has not signed yet. He's visited the Niners. He's visited the Texans. And I'm hearing that he's trying to get back out west. He likes the West Coast.
Right. I know he visited with the Saints as well. If I was Victor Cruz, I would wait to see where he landed first, and then go into a team in the same division.
True.
Because you know that's his woman, and he dominates them every time they play. I know Ezra's in our chat room. Ezra, what you think's going to happen with your boy Darrell Revis, man? Because I don't know if I would. That's the thing, that injury is going to play a big part in what you do in terms of making it move.
You know what's crazy with Revis, man? I'm a huge Revis fan, so I hope he gets his money. I hope he gets paid. However, if I am a GM and I'm in charge of player personnel, I am not paying dude $13 million per season because what he wants is a 5 to 6 year deal at $13 million in salary and at least $35 million plus in guarantees or $32 million plus in guarantees.
Yeah,
I can't do it.
Ezra, who's a Jets fan, tired Jets fan, says Revis is gone. Like, so, you know, that's not an option, I guess. So, but if I was Victor Cruz, I'd wait to see where Namdi landed first and just get, you know, try to talk to someone in that division. You know, that'll prolong his career and make him a Pro Bowler several more years over. Played against Namdi a couple times a year.
Revis and Ed Reed should go to the same spot, if you ask me. That'd be awesome.
That would be a mean tandem.
Tandem. Ed Reed is 78 years old.
Yeah, but he still gets like 6 picks a year.
Come on, man. No comment. Let me let
these people know where to find us, man. Check out our website, folks, at warroomsports.com to call in and speak with us about any of today's topics. Dial the Digital Extreme Technologies Hotline at 323-410-0012. We will answer from our luxurious Beverly Hills studio. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. It's like raising your hand. One of the general teachers will get at you.
All right, well, listen, let's jump right into the NBA. And before we do that, I just want to say that the NBA is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. You can do that by going to stitcher.com/The War Room. That's one word. Or going to our website and click on the Stitcher logo. You can listen from your computer, iPhone, Android phone. If you happen to still have a BlackBerry or a Palm phone, you have bigger issues, but you still can listen to The War Room. No memory or storage is wasted. And when you go to stitcher.com/The War Room, they ask you to enter a coupon code. Use The War Room because it enters you in the contest to win some money. With that being said, let's jump right into the game of basketball, gentlemen. And shout out to Curtis Blow. Now, the NBA players of the week for the past week were John Wall and LaMarcus Aldridge. I had the joy and privilege of watching Mr. Aldridge when they came to Philadelphia this past week, and he gave them over 30. This gentleman has game, and when watching him play, I just trying to figure out why they don't give him the ball every time down court. But John Wall's coming back, and, you know, player of the week. And if John Wall ever got a jump shot, he'd probably be one of the best players in the entire league.
Yeah.
This gentleman, think about the week they had.
Well, let me give you the numbers. John Wall averaged 24 points a game, 11 assists, 5 rebounds, 2.5 steals, while shooting 61.7% from the field, 80% from three-point range. So, Jimmy, he's listening to you. He's listening.
That's
on
right.
That jumper. 85.7% from the free throw line, while leading the Wizards to a 3-1 record for the week.
Great week. He had a great week. Definitely a great week. If he can be consistent with that jump shot, you know, that
Listen,
just makes him that much more of a player. Because that's one weakness.
LaMarcus Aldridge led the NBA in scoring at 27 points per game, while ranking 13th in rebounding at 10.7 boards, tied for third in blocks with 3 a game. He shot 56.4% from the field and converted all 19 of his free throw attempts, the most in the league this week without a miss.
Yo, I'm telling you, I watched this guy play. Yo, he looks like Ralph Sampson at Virginia, yo, like –
20 and 10 in all 3 games, and he's third in the NBA with 20 games this season of at least 20 points and 10 rebounds. He is balled.
Yeah, I'm telling you, watching this dude play, man, like, but he's in Portland, so, you know, probably just
he's
in Portland. Out there in Portland when
John Wall, I've gone on the record and said repeatedly that I think right now he is the third most athletic point guard in the league and probably the third most talented point guard in the league. That does not equate to him being better than Kyrie Irving.
Okay, all right. You said third most athletic. I got to think about that. I know off the top of my head.
Rose
and Westbrook.
Yeah, Westbrook
isn't
from the swim.
And I guess probably maybe Derrick Rose is healthy. Who else did you have?
I was counting a healthy Derrick Rose, making the assumption. And if he doesn't return, then, you know, that could change. But Westbrook, Derrick Rose, and then John Wall. If Rose doesn't return to his former self, then Wall probably slides in as my second most athletic point guard. I don't count Nate Robinson as a point guard.
You said skills now. Now, I don't know. I have to think about the whole
skill
thing.
Oh, no, skill-wise. Oh, man, come on. By far, there's only 2 people at the top of the skill heap, and that's Chris Paul and Kyrie Irving. Skill-wise, John Wall's not in anyone's conversation.
I thought you said skill-wise he was top 3.
No.
Okay.
No.
Right. You're just saying athletically. Okay. All right.
Athletics and talent. I do say talent because talent's a little more than just the athleticism. I think that he is very talented. I don't know what it is, man. He had Sam Cassell in there coaching. If you can't get some skills off Sam, maybe he just can't look at him in practice. I don't know.
Here's the thing, though, and to your point in the chat room, Ezra's saying that he thinks that Wall is more athletic than even a healthy Derrick Rose. And Joel says he thinks that Eric Bledsoe has to be up there. Eric Bledsoe became athletic as well.
I don't disagree with Joel's statement. I think that with the Rose thing, unless you're counting the injury, which we should, you know, unless you're counting that, and uninjured.
You don't think it's arguable that if they're both healthy, that Wall athletically isn't the same level as Rose? I mean, that's just popped in my head.
Yeah, but I give Derrick Rose the edge. I give Derrick Rose the edge based on size and weight and ability to do what he does at that size, because Rose is a 205-pound guy that leaves the earth. John Wall is about being 80. And so it's kind of like when you look at the strength difference too, Wall doesn't have the strength that Rose has.
Okay, because, you know, John Calipari, who coached both guys, said that John Wall is more athletic. But that's either here nor there. I think that it's
close. Yeah, I don't care what John Calipari says.
I think it's close either way. I mean, that's your opinion. Your opinion is that Derrick Rose is healthy. But we all know that skill-wise, he's definitely not top three. But
oh, no.
I just watch him play. I'm like, if this guy ever got a consistent jump shot, it's trouble. But in terms of LaMarcus Aldridge, I'm just very impressed with his game, the way he plays. The way he plays the game overall, on defense as well as offense. I mean, the way he picks everything. I think the guy's a solid all-around player. Just hate the fact that he plays in Portland, because no one cares to watch Portland. Now, their young point guard is tough, too. Lillard is tough, so we'll see what they build out there. Anyway, let's move on from those players in a week. Doc Bay, before we move on, is there anything you want to say about John Wall or Aldridge?
I mean, it's good to see John Wall back. And playing at a high level, it's good. It seemed like Aldridge wins NBA Player of the Week like every fifth week of the NBA season. So I mean, he's solid. I mean, bright spot in Portland. Just imagine if he had Greg Oden.
Yeah, and by the way, just the last point on this, you talked about what they're carrying around. B. Austin, John Wall is 6'4" and 195, and Derrick Rose is 6'3" and 190. So actually. You know, backwards. But that's either here nor there. It's close either way with those guys. But let's move on, though. Let's talk about the Miami Heat in their 24-game winning streak. Will they ever lose again this season? And then, you know, I'm not even being smart. I'm being serious the way these guys are playing.
I don't see them getting the streak.
You don't even see them getting to 33?
Yeah, I don't see them getting to 33.
Okay. Well, who do you see beating them?
Who's that? Who do they have in front of them? I know the Knicks.
The Spurs. They have the Spurs.
They're going to lose to either the Knicks or the Spurs, one of the two.
All right. Now, my question to you is this. Is it your opinion that they won't get it, or you don't want them to get it?
I don't really care. I'm not against them. Have that. Them having the record really has no bearing on me.
I'm just asking because those are two different questions that have to be asked. Because
absolutely,
listen, man, you know, we talk to people all day long, and there's some people who admittedly will say, "Listen, I don't care if they get it, but I don't want them to get it." I'm just asking. That's all, brother.
I don't care if they get it, but I don't want them to get it. That's kind of oxymoronic.
Yeah, Doc Bay, what's your opinion on this streak, and do you think they can make it to 33? In your opinion,
I mean, the streak is ridiculously impressive. They'll probably lose to a bad team, like they almost did to Cleveland. But only other teams that can really threaten them, outside of an anomaly by like the Bobcats and Hornets and Bobcats and Sixers, the Bulls can possibly stop them, the Spurs, the Knicks, as B. Austin alluded to, and they play the Celtics and Bulls again. So, you know.
That's a tough little stretch.
Yeah.
None of those teams are better than the Heat. I just think at some point there will be an off night. There'll be some mental fatigue. There'll be some physical fatigue.
they've already overcome all those things. I mean, they played Cleveland last night. They was down by like 30.
Hey, guess who? With the Sixers, if they keep winning, the Sixers will give them their 33rd win, and then the Bucks will give them their 34th win.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. Put it like this. If they did get the record, it wouldn't shock me. It's very impressive because I've had the argument both ways. People say this.
It's absolutely stupendous. I mean, what they've done to date is stupendous, because for me, looking at an NBA season being 82 games and the type of pounding the body takes and what they have to do and go through three games in a week, four games in a week sometimes, I just think the monotony of a long season mentally leads some teams to losses. You know, you come out.
No human being can do that.
There you go. Sonny Hill told you all best.
Yeah, but the thing is, Austin, I understand exactly what you're saying, but yo, they've already dealt with that, and that's what's crazy about the streak. To me, it's just difficult to even talk about the Heat because they have a bunch of fans who really aren't Heat fans or who are LeBron fans or just fans of whatever's popular at the time.
Right.
And they don't have the ability to be objective.
The pom-poms,
but then,
the prisoners of the
but
moment.
Then the flip side of that is you have people who just hate them for you know, the same reasons, but they hate them for that. So it's kind of difficult to have a serious conversation with people in terms of, you know, ranking the team in terms of what they're doing, or even just talking about the individual players, because people just either hate or love them. There's no in-between when it comes to the Miami Heat. I think that it's a very impressive streak, because I always thought that it would be one of those teams like the Bobcats, like the Sixers. Right? And if you look at the streak, those are the teams that gave them the – when they played the best teams, they, like, run them out the gym. The closest games they had have been the Sixers, Orlando, Cleveland.
Celtics.
The Celtics gave them a run, but in the fourth quarter, folded. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you know, I'm not saying they didn't fold, but, I mean, it was a close game.
Yeah, but all I'm saying is, man, they've dealt with that. So if they got the streak, it definitely wouldn't shock me. You know what I mean? So that's where I'm at with it in terms of the Miami Heat. It's difficult to talk about them, but this is what we do, man. I can be objective. I hate every team, and I hope they all lose except for my team, of course, but at the end of the day, you have to give them props. Now, something else that's been talked about, man. I don't even know why I'm asking you this question, but it was posed on our page, so I'm going to bring it up. LeBron's dunk over, you know, as they call him, Ralph Tresvant, because he looks just like Ralph Tresvant, over the Jet, Jake Terry, or Jordan over Austin's man, Knight. Which one was a better dunk?
Jordan,
I don't know why I asked the question. But it's not even close in my opinion, but someone asked the question, so I have to bring it up.
Jordan over Knight, clearly.
All right, well, let me give you the argument that they tried to give me of why the LeBron dunk is up there with the other dunk.
Mm-hmm.
It had nothing really to do with the actual
basketball
dunk
and everything
like
to do with their love of LeBron?
Not just that. The history between, Jet and LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
Jet taunted him when they beat him in the finals that time, and they don't really get along. But it's the backstory there.
Okay.
The fact that it was him, and then LeBron's comments after the fact, he liked the fact that it was him who got dunked on. You know, all that kind of stuff. That's the argument that was made to me. I don't agree, but what do you think about that, Doc Bay?
Yo, I think DeAndre Jordan's dunk was way better. I mean, LeBron's dunk on Terry was nice, but, I mean, DeAndre Jordan was just crazy, man. That can go down as dunk of the year. LeBron James' dunk may make the top 10, maybe. So.
Yeah.
Yo.
That's what it is. I'm going to agree with the doc, man.
Do you think that when you have plays like that, the players matter? I'm going to give you an example. Everyone knows the Pippen dunk on Union.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason why that was so nasty was because it was Pippen and Ewing. And at the time, the Bulls and Knicks were heated rivals and didn't like each other, which is why, you know, he dunked on him and, like, threw him to the ground. So that definitely made a difference. So do you think that has the ability?
Listen, man. Let me weigh in. Let me give some clarity here, man. LeBron James was on a fast break. He was the trail man. They were running, like, a 3-on-1 or a 4-on-2? It was a 3-on-1 where one defender is back, which automatically he's at a disadvantage. Now, let's qualify that and say Jason Terry, who's not known as some great defender, who's also 6'2", 6'3", and LeBron with a full head of steam. What is Jason Terry going to do? And LeBron didn't take off from any long distance away. He got to the rim and beat it down. He's 6'9", 275. Jason Terry is a little guy. He's supposed to get beat. I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal. It was a great dunk, but it's not dunk of the year. what DeAndre Jordan did was dunk of the year type material. He came down the lane in a half-court set and took off from God knows where to get to the rim and had a defender rotate over while he was in the air, and it didn't matter. He died just the same.
I'm going to throw another one in there for you. JaVale on Joakim Noah. What do you think about that dunk?
I think that was better than LeBron over Jason Terry. It wasn't better than Jordan over Knight.
Okay.
Now people are knocking that because JaVale didn't grab onto the rim.
Yeah, but neither did Blake Griffin when he did what he did.
When he Mozgolfed.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been some interesting dunks this past season, man. But
Go ahead, Jimmy.
I'm just saying, I definitely think that the DeAndre Jordan was a better dunk, but I get his point in terms of the players and what he was trying to say. He's still wrong. But it was also funny the way Terry fell because he looked like he got shot. Yeah, he looked like Sean Meek that got busted in the face. Like he just
is
fell
he
and
dead
like, laid out.
What you mean is he dead yet?
Is he dead?
All
anyway,
types of blood coming out.
Yo, shout out to Ghost and Ray. But I just think that it's been a lot of great dunks. The JaVale dunk was funny because he definitely didn't touch the rim, and that's like a new thing.
At all.
The JaVale dunk was funny because it was JaVale, and everything JaVale does is funny.
That too. We have another question that I'm going to pose, and this question comes from Casey Mack, another contributor. He says, what is the more impressive record, winning 33 straight or winning 72 overall?
I think 72.
You think so?
72, because that shows that the whole 82-game season, you guys won the most games and can argue to be the best team ever.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it's a matter of opinion. I'm just asking what's the opinion. Anybody there listening, let us know what your opinion is. It's a great question. I don't think it's clear-cut because, 72 games, that means you lost, 10 games in the course of the season? 33 straight is that's difficult to do, man. Night in and night out. There's no day.
You only lost 10 games, which means you only lose one out of every 8 games.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
These streaks have happened in watered-down leagues. Like, I was listening to someone, and they said when the Lakers did that streak in 72, it was like the ABA was folding, and you had some new teams added on, and the talent pool, you really only had about maybe 7 strong teams, and now they expanded to 16 teams, so it was diluted, and they just ran through it. The Lakers ran through everybody. Then now with all these super teams, it's the same thing. I mean, you have a lot of bad teams out there. Now, I think this streak, that's why you didn't see these streaks in the 80s and in the 90s when there was a lot more competition from top to bottom in the NBA.
Yeah, this is a great argument. I think we could do this inside the war room because this is definitely a great argument. The 72 versus 33. Joel says he thinks 33 is more impressive. So, and I can see both sides of that. Honestly, I don't know where I fall, but they're both great accomplishments. Which one is better? Who knows? Something else I want to bring up before we get out of here is the Nuggets. No one's talking about the Nuggets and their winning streak as well.
No one's favorite player is on the Nuggets.
This is true, but it's also. I mean, they're having a streak at the same time as somebody, going for the record. You know what I'm saying? It's not like they're doing this while, so they're being overshadowed. But the question is this. How dangerous of a team is this in the playoffs? Are they legit contenders?
No. Not legit contenders. They could conceivably win a series, but there's some deficiencies there that would keep them from being a legit contender and moving on to the Western Finals.
So,
really
who's your favorite? Is your favorite the Clippers or OKC? Okay.
It's between the Spurs and OKC. Okay. The Clippers, when you slow it down and you play in the half court with the Clippers, their bench depth and them not being as disciplined and organized in the half court kind of slows them up. And their only weapon becomes Chris Paul. Imagine that. With all the talent they have in the half court, they have problems.
Yeah.
So I would say the Spurs, and it's between the Spurs and OKC. as my West. The age of their key players makes me doubt them. And the Thunder, their lack of scoring punch from anywhere outside of the one and the three gives me problems. I mean, well, you got Kevin Martin. They have no big man, so they rely on Serge Ibaka to score. And he's moving further away from the basket.
I need to see the Spurs do it in the playoffs, big pause, because that's like, I just know that when Tony Parker can't get into the lane in the playoffs. Now, I know they've changed their offense this season. I see a lot of different wrinkles in their offense that they don't generally
right.
have in terms of like the way they run their double screens this year. But at the same time, I don't know, man.
When they don't get in the lane, it all goes away.
Yeah, it's like the whole regular season really means nothing, and they lead us to believe they're going to make a run, and it happens over and over again. But my thing is, watching the Nuggets handle OKC the other day, I was like, "Lil, I mean, I don't know what these guys are playing out of their mind, and they're playing as a team. They really don't have any player that's like, you know, putting up 30 or 28."
Gallinari.
George
Karl
is not just him.
George Karl
George
is underrated Karl. As a coach.
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, he always gets credit as being one of the better coaches. I mean, he's probably better than Larry Brown. But anyway, I just think that they
I'm
could play
that.
Possibly
I'm
be
play that for Larry.
Shout out to Larry Brown, man, because he's supposed to be coming on too. So he may not after he hears this. But George calls his man anyway. But I'm just saying that I think they could be a contender. Whether they are or not, it remains to be seen, man, because anything could happen. Could they
it
win
all
the whole thing? I don't think
all
that
fun
happens,
and games.
In the West.
It's all fun and games when it's the regular season and
exactly,
it's one game.
Exactly. That's
and
true.
It's one
this
game.
True.
So
this is true.
Gauging by one game during that 72-10 season the Bulls had, I could say that the Toronto Raptors were good since they beat the best.
The Nuggets beat them too.
Yeah.
Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf.
Yo, but also that you're talking about the year they lost the Bulls. The Bulls also lost that one game. I never forget against to Toronto when Mighty Mouse went on everybody. Mike, Scotty, Mighty Mouse gave them everything they wanted. Last time I saw Mighty Mouse play well. But so anything can happen. You're right on one thing. My next question, last question before we get out of here. Deron Williams is having an off season. We all know this, but he's been playing better recently. Have you guys noticed? The improvement in his game, what's going on? Like, where was it at in the beginning of the season?
Listen,
I've
man.
Noticed it. They said he was out of shape going into the Olympics.
Injury.
I've heard that. And then he was injured. He had an injured wrist that he said needs to get surgery on, bad ankle that he needs to get surgery on. So,
listen, man, until I see two complete seasons of him falling off, he's still the baddest light-skinned dude in the league to me. So, he in my top five. My top five PGs until I see two consistent years of fall off.
Listen, man,
so
he is no longer the top mulatto in the NBA. That's
Steph
Blake
Curry?
Griffin now.
No,
that's Blake Griffin now.
Blake is kind of falling off a little bit, for real.
Well, I mean, if you look at his numbers, Blake's numbers have went down, but his minutes played has went down as well, and I think that's the coach trying to save him for the playoffs. He didn't go down that much. I mean, he went from 22 points a game to about like 20 points a game, and now he's about like 19.7.
He's
like,
still
he's
not
like
better
19.
Than Kevin Love either. He's still not
he's
better
than
Kevin
Love. No, Kevin Love, did he still play basketball?
Injured. He was injured.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, I listen, man, what have you done for me lately? Kevin Love doesn't play in the NBA anymore. Anyway, I'm just saying, but Kevin Love's not a mulatto. We're talking about the top mulatto player. The top mulatto player
in
the league. Is
I'm going Deron.
Okay, Who's the top mulatto player out there, everybody? You got to be Blake Griffin. Anyway, man, it's time to get out of here. By the way, Kill, you're getting slandered in our chat room. They're saying that Kevin Love is overrated, and he can never have
Yeah, of course, because he's a white guy. And he's
not,
he doesn't know.
How do you know there's not a white guy saying that?
A white guy can still think a white guy's overrated because he's white.
No,
he's knocking
way,
my man because he's white, man.
No, that's Joel saying that. No, I know why Joel's saying it. He's saying because Kevin Love has never resulted in wins no matter where he is. And that includes his entire basketball career going back to Pee Wee. Anyway.
Neither did Blake Griffin. Neither did Blake Griffin before Chris Paul came
here. Hey, Blake Griffin was winning in Oklahoma, though. Anyway,
Kevin Love is winning at UCLA.
Thanks for joining us in the War Room today, soldiers. Shout out to everybody, chat room, Facebook, Twitter, all the callers who chimed in. Special thanks to our guest, Lee Steinberg, to come in and talk about the NFL concussions as well as his career. Tune in the same time, same place next week, as we'll be deep in the midst of the NCAA tournament. Until then, enjoy the games and your sports week. Be sure to catch our conversations on Facebook, Twitter, and our videos on warroomsportstv.com. Until next week, everybody, do not accept mediocrity and be steadfast in the war against ignorance. I'll see you chumps on top.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.